Are you outside right now? Or are you out of your comfort zone and pushing yourself to do something new? I'm going to assume the answer is no. And I say this because we spend way too much time indoors and in our comfort zones. I think today's guest might inspire you to reflect on that and ask yourself some big questions. Today's episode is a lesson in discovering our limitless potential. And something I think about quite often is that the limit of what impact I can have is limited only by my own potential. Why wouldn't we want to unleash our full potential? Just before we get into that, it's time for this week's positive news segment. Today, we've got some exciting news from the world of health and medicine that can make a significant impact on the fight against malaria. The World Health Organization, or the WHO, has given the green light to a new, more affordable and easier to produce malaria vaccine. There's a new kid on the block in the fight against malaria, and its name is R21. Now, if you're wondering why this is such a big deal, well, in 2021, malaria claimed the lives of 619,000 people. That's where R21 comes in as a glimmer of hope. This vaccine is not only a game changer in preventing malaria, it's also more cost effective. And the best part, there's enough of it to go around. Jackie Cook, a malaria expert from the London School of Hygiene and Tropical Medicine, puts it like this. There's going to be enough of it to actually give out to children. The simplicity and the accessibility of R21 could be a lifesaver. R21 proved its worth by meeting the WHO's target of 75% efficacy in a trial involving 4,800 children. They each received three doses with a booster dose after 12 months. And the results? This vaccine is ready to tackle malaria head on. Mary Hamill, an epidemiologist leading the WHO's malaria vaccine implementation program, summed it up beautifully. By adding the vaccine to the current tools that are in place, tens of thousands of children's lives will be saved every year. Already approved in Burkina Faso, Ghana, and Nigeria, R21 will hit the shelves in mid-2024 at a price tag of around $2 to $4 per dose. If you compare that to what's currently used more commonly, that's the RTSS, also known as Mosquirix, that costs around $9.80 per dose. R21 brings the cost down while keeping the protection up. However, this isn't a silver bullet, and malaria isn't going to go down without a fight. In some areas where malaria transmission is high, there's a need to increase vaccine coverage for other diseases. As Jackie Cook rightly points out, it's still going to be a challenge to make sure it gets into enough children's arms to be protective. So there you go, an exciting step forward in the fight against malaria, with R21 joining the ranks, potentially making it more accessible to those who need it most. This is a story of science, innovation, and progress. Now, on with today's show. Today's guest is the wonderful James Corfe from the Outward Bound Trust. The Outward Bound Trust is all about getting kids outside in nature more. It'll come as no surprise that kids are spending less time outside than they used to, and that does lead to some negative consequences. James and the rest of the team at the Outward Bound Trust work hard to help young people build vital life skills, which appear to be lacking generation by generation. James tells me some really wonderful stories and highlights the importance of throwing ourselves into uncomfortable situations, embracing being out of our depth, and learning what we're capable of and how limitless our potential can be. I'll apologise in advance for the audio quality on this recording. We didn't have an ideal setup for James at the time, but nonetheless, I think you're still really going to enjoy this one. Let's get some context and some story and some information on what the Outward Bound Trust is all about.
So I'm James, or Jim, and I'm a senior instructor with the Outward Bound Trust. I've been working with the Trust for about 9 years now, coming up. And basically, our mission is to take young people out of their normal environment and get them exploring the locks, the mountains, the lakes, the estuaries, and just kind of reconnecting with nature a little bit because of the growth and the potential it has with it. And I love my job.
Good stuff. Something we love to hear. I mean, so it really excites me. I mean, I love being outside personally, but I guess what I'm keen to know is if we start to look at why you guys kind of exist and why the work you do is so important. Yeah, why is it so beneficial to the young people that you work with?
So we're going to have to go on a bit of a history tour, really. So Outward Bound, we've been open for quite a long time. So we actually first founded down in Wales at our Abu Dhabi Centre in 1941 during the heat of the Second World War. Basically, what was happening is loads of boats were getting torpedoed out of the water, and sometimes they'd be stuck in the sea for days waiting for rescue. And what they were noticing is all the young lads were actually all dying pretty quickly when the old people with big old beers, Uncle Albert type people, were still cracking on. And basically they decided that it's because our young people need to be kind of, they don't have the life experience, they need to be taught about it. So they started out with Bound. They used to be quite long courses. They used to do something called drown proofing, where they used to go out in the estuary for 12 hours. Apparently health and safety says we can't do that anymore. But quite regularly, I might tell that story to a group of, like this week, I was working with a group of 13, 14 year olds. And they're like, yeah, but we're not going to war right now. But actually, I would suggest there's loads of issues that young people today have to deal with that are probably just as pressing as war. So obviously, we've got things like the constant backlash of social media and how they can never get away from that. Recovery from the pandemic. You know, there's the cost of living and also the potential of like AI disruption and many other things we could probably put a thing on. That actually means that young people need to kind of know who they are and be resilient through those moments as well. But I'm sure we get into a lot more of the things that we think is good as we chat.
We definitely will. Yeah, those specific kind of, you know, benefits and lessons and things, we'll definitely touch on those. But I guess before we do, I'm actually really interested to know on more of a personal level from you, how did this connect you? How did you find this opportunity? What about it spoke to you? And how did you get involved?
So I suppose the story goes back. So I'm not just a senior instructor here. I'm also a sea kayak expeditioner. And I spend quite a lot of my life in a kayak in the sea doing big expeditions I'm quite lucky to say, with my wife. You know, I've found a very good person that we can share these experiences together. And I've kayaked around the South Island, New Zealand. I've also kayaked around the North Island. I've kayaked the length of Patagonia and around Cape Horn. And I'm about to set off on my next journey, which is actually to kayak to and around Tasmania and climb loads of sea stacks as we go along the thing. I'll tell you like one little story on our first trip. So our first trip in the South Island, me and my wife, Fee, this is our first big trip. And I was about 24 or 25 and she was 21. And basically we were going down, we knew nothing. Some guy at Sea Kayaking UK, a guy called Nigel Dennis, took a bit of a punt on us and gave us some equipment and said, go give it a shot. And we were just setting off down the coast and we were just out there by ourselves. With that, we kind of was learning a lot of lessons on the way and kind of working out actually how do we survive in this kind of environment. One day we actually kind of got stalked by a great white shark and it was pretty it was pretty terrifying. I remember us sticking together, like not wanting to land. Sorry, go ahead.
Well, no, I'm just gobsmacked. I did not expect you to say that.
And we were like, we can't land because there was this dumping surf. So we had to stay in our boats because if we got it wrong, then we'd be swimming in the water. So we wouldn't want that. Eventually, we landed and we're like, oh, that was pretty scary. And the next day, we kind of noticed that we were paddling like really close with each other because we're still a bit nervous. And as the day went on, we started drifting apart, like even though we like each other. We don't really need to talk to each other every second of the day. So it was probably about a few hundred meters apart. And then suddenly I saw a fin pop up next to my boat and my mouth just went dry. And basically I was like, oh my God, where's Fee? And then a giant bull killer whale just surfaced next to my boat. And I remember paddling really quick to Fee, going, there's a fucking killer whale coming. And she didn't believe me. she kind of thought I made it all up. And then the next second, there was all of these, the whole pod came round. They had like calves and like the mums all swimming around us. Obviously, he was just checking us out. And it was just like one of the most awe-inspiring moments of my life. That's not, it sounds like I've had loads of great opportunities. And I definitely have. And I've been really privileged in that. But actually, I grew up in a relatively urban environment. I didn't find the outdoors until my early 20s. I did terribly at school. It wasn't until later in life that I found out I got diagnosed with things, stuff like ADHD, dyslexia, dyscalculus. And at least that was a bit of a redemption. But it was definitely a really hard time. Throughout my school life, I actually struggled. And, to some extent still do. I really struggled with anxiety and depression. And there's been a few times in my young times where that was almost tipping to the dangerous side. Until one day my mum saw, because mums always know best, she saw an apprenticeship in the Isle of Man at a lovely centre called the Venture Centre, so shout out to them, for an apprenticeship. And basically I went there, earned 50 quid a week, lived in a shed, and I didn't move back down to the south of England since, because I basically found my way. Don't get me wrong, I still, anxiety and depression is something that people have to deal with. But I do find now that if I have these moments, I take myself away. I go out into nature. And that works for me. I'm not saying it works for everybody. But, nature is such a healing thing. And at the moment, I would say that young people have a pandemic of anxieties, depressions, and a myriad of other things. And I truly believe that part of it is to do with the fact that we are less connected to the outdoors than we ever have before. So it kind of means that's how my path went. And that's probably why I'm so passionate about it, because I've seen the development in my own life. Does that answer your question?
It does. It does more so than I ever imagined you would. you would. I wasn't expecting a shark attack. That's
Oh, well, it wasn't an attack. It was a shark stalk.
No, that's brilliant. And I mean, totally. It makes a lot of sense how you've ended up where you have. We'll definitely get into some of those. Those skills and values and lessons and benefits. Let's definitely do that. But maybe it's a good idea to paint us a little bit of a picture on what it is that someone, a young person coming to you, might actually do. What might they find themselves doing? I guess, we're going to be outside, yes, but what does that mean?
Yep, 100%. Well, it depends on the course, but let's just go for our bog standard, our standard course, our bread and butter, shall we say, which is our 5-day courses for schools. And we work with primary, we work with secondary, we work with colleges, we work with universities, and we also do early career stuff as well. But let's just say our bread and butter, I'd probably say,
is secondary school students.
They will rock up to the centre. And they'd be really nervous because they want to know what their bedroom looks like. They want to know what they're going to eat. All the basics that we need to sort out before we do everything. And also, they want to know what are they going to be with their best friend, or are they going to work with that person that's a bit weird, which isn't weird. It's just because they don't know them yet, I think, is normally the main thing. And then as soon as possible, we want to try and immerse them into some kind of adventure. And our standard is what we call a jog and dip. That it doesn't always have to be a jog. Like this week, I actually went down. We did a river walk to get to the lock side. And basically, we go in as a group, always as a group, linked up together. And we dunk ourselves under the water and then swim around for a while. And I suppose that kind of links back into the history side of it being about sea survival, but also just kind of rather than some other types of centres that rely heavily on kind of on-site dynamics, like these kind of like climbing walls and stuff, we try and utilize the real environment as much as possible. And if we go back into the mental well-being, cold water is just great for your mental health. It's quite quick to realize that things can be worse, isn't it, when you're in freezing water in the middle of January. But then through that, we get amazing power as instructors, because we get to meet these young people. We get to connect with them. We get to find out their likes and their interests. And then we build a course that we think would be good for that group. So that might include rock climbing. It could do canoeing, kayaking, Quite regularly, I say most weeks, we do expeditions, which is something you don't see as much of at outdoor centres for young people now. So this week, my group did a good, I think it was total 15-kilometre expedition, which we went canoeing as well as camping in very heavy rain, and they did fantastic, I must say. And that's how the course kind of looks, really. It's just try and fit in the most useful activities for them. So at other centres, what might happen is they go, oh yeah, we're paid for canoeing on the Monday, then we want them to do a rock climbing thing in the afternoon. When actually yesterday the weather was really bad and I got to kind of walk in, I saw my group and I could see that they had a lot of worry, they had a lot of kind of anxiety stuff going on. And I could just have a proper conversation with them and say, right, I've got all this stuff planned. Tell me what you think is appropriate. And I'm not going to say we're not going to do some of the stuff, but let's see if we can adapt it to make it fit you better. And actually, they had a fantastic day and it ended up with us for the last 45 minutes of the day. They just wanted to go swimming. So we got out of a river and we were wearing wetsuits. We just spent about 45 minutes jumping off our jetty and having that moment. And considering at the start of the week, one of our girls, Sophia, didn't actually even want to step foot in the water, and then she was just jumping off with her friends. Just shows that kind of level of progression that got built into it.
No way, really cool. And that definitely brings me to my next question perfectly, which was, you know, what benefits are you seeing that these young people get out of this? You know, what are they learning, what kind of values are being instilled, and what growth are you seeing with the young people that you work with?
That's a great question. I think one of the main things is we try and do, and it's quite hard, one of the main things, we need to have fun. That sounds like a kind of a cop-out answer, but actually it sounds a bit twee, but like, we want to make the learning fun. We want them to be going, actually, I've had a good time. Not only have I pushed myself, and some of that stuff might be like more of a fun too. Have you ever heard of the types of fun?
Doesn't it? I only know one type of fun.
Well, there's one thing you will know them. Okay, so there's type one fun is fun in the moment. You know, to some people that might be chilling with your mates. It might be on a roller coaster. It might be on TikTok. That's like something that kids like doing. Isn't
okay,
it? And it's fun in the moment. Okay, and you know you're having fun. Type two is more kind of, actually, it's the stuff that you have to work at a little bit more. For me, it'd be like those expeditions I was talking about. There's definitely times I've cried in those expeditions going, why am I here? There's been times where we've had like waves crash through our tent and all of our stuff's wet and we've got 2 weeks of rain. And it's grim, but it's about you. But then you look back on it and then the most rewarding, fulfilling times of my life. So that's the main thing, is we want them to have fun. Some of that, I'm not ashamed to say, is type two fun. Like my group, I had this one boy this week, bless him. He was very homesick. He, because of the pandemic, probably the pandemic, I'm going to put that through, because he didn't get to do a year six residential. He has never been away from his mum. And he was just completely bawling on expedition for about 45 minutes, unconsolable. And he was sitting next to me and his amazing teacher, Lorraine. She was great. And we were just there going, it's okay, you'll get through it. Think about how proud your mum's going to be, all that kind of stuff. We couldn't get through to him because he just hasn't had this experience. Never been camping. He's never sat under a tarp in the rain pretending to have a good time. And he's probably never spent a night away from his mum or, you know, grandparents, shall we say. And actually yesterday, walking up from the river, he just came up to me, and it sounds like I'm making up, but he was just saying, I'm really glad I stayed, because he was saying, could he get picked up? Could we get someone to come get him? And we were like, oh, let's stick out the night. He was just like, he's really glad that he stuck around, because actually he's had such a good day today. And now he looks back on it, he's really glad he had that experience. So I suppose one of the main things we talk about is resilience. And like old people always say, every generation always says the new generation is not as resilient as the last one. When actually the research suggests that actually they're more resilient. It's just that a different thing. It's quite obvious that someone in the Second World War is being resilient, or let's put it something basic. Refugee students from Ukraine, you're not going to say that they're not resilient after they've run away from a war-torn country. But like just over a year ago, they were just the same as the kids we have in these countries. It's just that they had a real need to be resilient in that moment. So actually, I'd say we don't teach resilience. We just kind of show them that they are resilient and actually tactics to cope whilst trying to go through those resilience building experiences, I suppose. Does that make sense? Or?
It does. Yeah. I think resilience is a really undervalued kind of, not skill, but maybe it is a skill. I'm not sure what you'd call that, but you know, something that to have is hugely valuable and not, I don't think, spoken about very much. But yeah, being resilient to the world and not letting things negatively impact you and affect you and hurt you when they don't need to, you know, it can kind of make you fairly unstoppable, I think, if you're a very resilient person. But I did find it very interesting that you said there that the science shows kids are more resilient now than ever before, because you sort of go around listening to what the older and older generations and you think the complete opposite, wouldn't you? Like, oh, kids these days are so soft and you know that this kind of speak.
Well, you've got to think when it comes to, like, if you just look at highers or GCSEs. By the way, I'm based up at our Scottish Centre, so I might flip between different things. But I did grow up in England, obviously. But the highers and GCSEs, there's more and more pressure every year for them to get gooder. Is that gooding? Maybe I should have done better at school. Better grades. And you've got to, those. I'd hate to be a teenager now. So if a kid didn't like me at school, I don't get me wrong, there was one kid that used to bully me quite a lot. And actually, I'd always hide from him on the way home and all this kind of stuff. But when I got home, or if I wasn't around that person, I was safe from them. But now they can be, you know, dropping into their Snapchats or whatever and be constantly on them. We've also got cost of living that's affecting so many young people. And it's quite... it's quite funny if someone goes, oh, these kids aren't resilient, when actually you might talk to one kid and they might be in temporary housing or don't know, they know that their mum is not eating or something. Because we get a lot of students from very diverse backgrounds and they know for a fact their mums, I've heard a young person tell me once that their mum purposely doesn't eat dinner because they want to make sure there's enough things. And then when pay comes, they can come through. So like, how can I say that person isn't resilient? You know, that person has been through loads of different things that I haven't. Doesn't mean that my things were worse or better or easier. It's just different.
We're often quick to assume and judge, aren't we?
Yeah, I suppose other things that we value is independence, you know, doing stuff for yourself. You know, I think especially with COVID, we've had so 2 years of essential social and personal development stolen from young people. And I'm not saying the measures that we did over COVID were wrong. I definitely believe we need to protect people. But if there's any other time period where you said you heard that a child was forced to stay inside, not see their friends, not go to school, and could only go outside to exercise for half an hour a day, you'd phone child services. So therefore, these young people need to kind of learn how to socialise, need to learn how to be independent. They need to learn how to play. They need to know how to be in nature again. And that was before the pandemic, but it's just so much more important now as well.
Really? You've noticed that change since COVID?
Oh, 100%. And since COVID as well, the amount, like, obviously we get all full medical information, and maybe this is anecdotal. I haven't got the numbers, but like, I swear I'm seeing so much more anxieties and depressions coming through.
I wanted to see what you thought the trend was. I mean, just remind me how long you've been doing this again. What did you?
So I've been working. I think I've been working the outdoors. It's getting harder to remember, for about 30, maybe for coming on 14 years.
14 years.
So
okay.
Yeah. So I left the southeast of England and moved up north, as I said, and didn't look back. And I was in my early 20s. I'm now 34. I would say there's been major things. This sounds quite rude, but obviously I'm seeing that their fitness levels, though, is decreasing as well. And that's something that we want to not. This isn't Outward Bound missions. This is now speaking from gym rather than Outward Bound. But I feel like any opportunity to get young people out and moving is a good thing. So there's that. I'm also seeing a trend, as I said already, with mental health issues. And maybe that's just because we're getting better at talking about it. So like I already disclosed that I I definitely struggle with anxiety and stuff like that. But I definitely, at school, I wasn't diagnosed with that. So maybe it's just that we're getting better at that.
Yeah.
So this is just anecdotal at this point. But
that is interesting. Do you reckon you figured out or maybe noticed, even anecdotally, what might be causing some of those things and an increase in anxiety or certainly the fitness levels? That kind of surprises me, because I kind of feel like, certainly maybe more amongst adults in the last, I don't know, let's say 10 years, this sort of gym culture and you know, like at leisure wear all the time, you know, there's this kind of fitness as a fashionable thing to a certain degree. And I thought maybe that might be genuine and we're getting fitter as people, but do you think maybe with kids that's not the case?
You definitely do see it. Like I had one teacher a couple of weeks ago telling me they were quite concerned about some of these boys, because some of these boys were so much of these gym rats that they were probably they're bulking too much in a way that's not right. Safe for a growing lad. I don't, like, again, this is all anecdotal, and actually I'd say that there's probably, I think young people are just less likely to go walk in and be out. When I was younger, I remember me, I'll bring up my old mum again. Sorry, mum, I didn't mean to call you old.
She's resilient, it's fine.
Yeah, she's great. I remember this one time we had a dog called Bruno, and there's some woods that was about, I don't know, 20 minutes away from my house. And me and my brother Ben used to go play in these woods all day, every day throughout the summer holidays. That's what we did. So much that we'd go out there. I remember this one time my mum marching across the field, face like red and angry, because she was so annoyed because the dog had got bored and walked home. And these days, there's an instructor called Ushton that I work with who said a story about statistics. And he was just saying that now, back in the 70s when he grew up, the area of play was about 5 kilometers or 5 miles from your house. And then when I was younger, it was probably more about 3, you know. And now apparently these statistics say that the area of play that parents are allowed, that generally feel happy with their kids to play, is within like 300-400 meters from the house. And they don't want them to go away from it.
Whoa.
And apparently that's, I haven't looked at this myself, but he said that this has been researched and this is what the popular trend in the UK is. And so that says a lot. You know, it's quite hard to be, you know, fit and healthy if you're only staying in your tarmac dead place and just being used to it. I'm not here talking about weight. I feel like young people need to be happy in themselves. So that's the main thing. But I do think that more natural play will build into that resilience. It will also build into that kind of fitness levels and all that kind of stuff. And also just for mental health, isn't it? Time and nature. I really struggle to think anyone that can't think that going for a walk in the woods is probably good for your mental health. I talked about jog and dip. The cold water shock has been proven to be brilliant for anxiety and stuff, because actually it simulates similar kind of responses your body goes through if you're having a panic attack. So if we can coach young people how to deal with cold water and cold water shock, well then also if we can teach them that they can use these skills if you're about to do a talk or if you're really scared of going to this social thing or where I'm going with this, then it's the same skills that they can build and actually become better and more fulfilled and happy people, hopefully. Yeah.
It's being pushed out of your comfort zone, isn't it?
Yeah, 100%.
Being deliberately uncomfortable and getting comfortable with that. And I think, I didn't think this was a man I'd ever be quoting, but Conor McGregor, I seem to remember him saying, the more you seek to be uncomfortable, the more comfortable you will be. And it makes total sense, doesn't it? You know, the more you can throw yourself into, the more that you feel out of your depth and deal with it, the greater your comfort levels and depth will be. And it makes total sense, you know, what you could then go on to achieve past that. It makes total 100%. Sense to me. But yeah, I guess it's about getting that message to kids, isn't it? Which is exactly why you guys exist. You've shared some really nice stories throughout, actually, and I was hoping you would do that because they are what resonate with me most, and I think probably with the listeners as well. But do you think you'd be able to share and pinpoint any one particular story that really stands out for you that shows really, you know, the impact that you guys have. Maybe that's, you know, a young person you've been with specifically, or maybe a colleague of yours, but just a really, you know, a standout memory for you that says, yeah, that was a good day. That was a good thing we did.
100%. I'm going to change the name of this young person because I haven't spoken. I don't want to share someone else's story. Just in case they don't feel. So let's just call this person Claire. Okay. And I alluded to other things. So, you know, we did the 5-day courses. Over summer, we do loads of different courses. So we do 5-day courses that are just independent people that don't know each other, coming around the country and across the world sometimes to do it. We do 7-day courses. We do a 14-day course. And last of all, we do my favorite course out of the whole Outward Bound, our 19-day Pinnacle Expedition, which is 19 days of continuous expedition throughout our areas. And I've been really lucky. So I've got to work at every single Outward Bound centre that we've got. So we've got one in Wales. We've got two in the lakes. And there was one girl on this 19-day expedition called Claire, we'll call her. And basically, this was in a very small group. So this was still during COVID times. We only could have a group size of 5 maximum to make sure we were within a 6 bubble. And I only had 4 students on my course this year. And I was with the 18 to 22-year-olds on the course. Claire had quite a unique story, basically. She had immigrated from Hong Kong, and she immigrated in the winter of 2020. And she went to university, and she basically spent the next how many ever months, or was it? She spent the next year in her university accommodation, and she didn't meet anyone. The only time that she'd be chatting to anyone was through university Teams or Zoom calls. When she came on the course, I was really worried for her because she was silent. Her English was it was good, but there was definitely holes. She didn't seem like she felt comfortable talking to the other 3 students, who were really nice and really supportive. She seemed to find everything very hard. Her bag was very heavy. The group, the other 3 students, had to kind of take stuff out of her bag and help carry her. And she also cried a few times, and it was quite hard to see. Because actually, I was thinking, is this the right? This is kind of maybe potentially going into the idea of maybe she's been put on the wrong course here. After 5 days, something happened though. And she started being able to, she started opening up to the students. She started chatting to them. She started talking about her experiences. She shared the story of her just going to the country. Her real name, well, she has 2 names. She has an English name and her official name. And she hadn't gone by her official name since she moved to the UK because no one could pronounce it and she was embarrassed. And she shared with us, I'm not going to make up a different name because I don't want to become into stereotyping, but she shared with her official name, and we called her that for the rest of the course. At the start of the course, she wasn't swimming, she wouldn't go in the water, and we found out it's because she didn't know how to swim, and she felt quite embarrassed by it. After the 19-day expedition, the kind of last 4 days or 3-4 days is self-supported, so I leave them, and I just check up with them. And they are self-sufficient. They need to look after themselves. And we would do check-ins and make sure that their welfare is okay. And through that, she really shone as a leader. And she started actually taking charge. We finished off the expedition by stopping off the other side of the lake. And with the idea of swimming across the lake. Obviously, she couldn't swim. I'm feeling a bit emotional talking about this story. We have these swimming floats, which are like these bags with a tether, and the other 3 students just said, it's okay, we're going to pull you across. And she had this inflatable thing, and they had her on a rope, like a tether, and they all 3 of them held onto her, and they swam there, I don't know, 600 metres across the lake to get back to the centre. And at the end, they all just jumped up and were hugging each other. And I just remember sitting around the fire, and her just saying, this feels like I actually have found a place. I've got friends. I've got people that care for me. And for someone who had literally spent a year in isolation, that's a very dramatic story. Sadly, they're not all like that. But that is the reason that I go to work. And it's just beautiful what we can do in the outdoors. Sorry, that was a bit soppy.
No, beautiful yeah. is the word. That's exactly yeah. how I was going to describe it. That is beautiful. And it's, yeah, it is really nice to hear stuff like that. It really is. Yeah, I mean, I don't really know what to say. That was a great story. And
yeah,
it's just, you know, that demonstrates to me how surprisingly powerful this stuff can be. Because I guess on the surface of it, it doesn't sound like much. Okay, being outside, great. You know, I can go and step outside my garden, but that's not what it is. It's, you know, the teamwork element of it. I think that's, you know, that's a huge thing. I've learned a new value recently, actually, a new word that's I've been thinking about a lot, and it's interdependence. And it doesn't get used very much. I don't know whether it's a bit outdated, but it's only really independent people can actually achieve interdependence, which is when you get a collection of independent people that are very confident and secure and comfortable in themselves. They are able to collaborate with other independent people in such a way that what they create is so much more powerful than what either of them could do independently. And I think you've not used that word, and like I say, not many people do, but that strikes me as a story of interdependence. And I think it's wonderful. It's not every day you hear things like that. I think it's great. And
well, you've set me up perfectly. because actually Outward Bound as well, we try and make sure that this isn't just, so basically the old theory for outdoor education was let them out and speak for themselves, and that is definitely a thing. And I do feel like the power of just standing in a glen in the middle of Scotland and watching the weather roll through is pretty powerful. But actually I think it's more believed now that actually without some kind of reflection, without some kind of structured thought process, that's probably only going to be quite short-term learning. So actually we do structured learning, and that's a model that I use quite regularly actually, is well, are we being dependent, are we being independent, or have we gone to the, you know, the true nirvana of being interdependent, and we're not just looking after ourselves but we're looking after everyone else as well. And I suppose with that as well, it kind of shows, I've got one last little story. This is a small snippet story of a guy this summer on our 90-day course called Toby. This is a boy who was, again, in the older group on the 90-day expedition. He's a very big boy, is the only way to put this. He used to be a rugby player, and he had an episode of mental psychosis. And because of the drugs he was on and the time he was going through, he basically lost all that muscle, and it turned to quite a lot of fat. He came on an Outward Bound course because it gave him an outlet to prove that he could do it. So actually, whatever we'd say to him, whatever learning stuff, it was a personal challenge that he was like, no, I'm going to get back into shape. I'm going to prove to everyone he was saying that my brothers think I'm just going to give up straight away. And this was his outlet to say, no, I'm making this change. And that's what Outward Bound can do as well. It can prove to people that actually it doesn't matter if I think they've done well, if their parents think they've done well, or their teachers. It's an outlet for them to say, actually, I'm going to smash this and I'm going to be the person that I want to be. But yeah, sorry.
No, so yeah, getting those personal victories, they're hugely motivating and feed into so many parts of your life, don't they? I think one of the last things I want to get some more information on you on, it's behind you now, the Let Us Out campaign. My understanding of it now is what you guys are doing is kind of in becoming law, is that right? Is it becoming more of a you know, government backed recognized thing that you're doing? Just give us some information on that.
So the Let Us Out campaign is not saying from us, or I suppose the Let Us Out campaign is from us, but like what's happening at the moment is basically across each different nation, England, Scotland and Wales, there's a new bill trying to put past to make sure there's provision for every young person to have the opportunity to do an outdoor course. Okay. At this point, the Let Us Out campaign obviously will be hugely beneficial to us, because actually most of our, we're a charity,
So most of our students are bursary funded, so we give them massive amounts of money to come. If the government's putting quite a large part of the bill, obviously it means that we can access more, we can give them better kit, we can do whatever. But actually, the outdoor sector is a sector that is slowly dying, especially since the pandemic. There's so many centres that are closing. So the Let Us Out campaign isn't just to give Outward Bound more business. It's to let your local centres keep running. It's to make sure that there are more council-run centres. It's to make sure that these young people can have these experiences. And obviously, as I already said, it'd be great. I'd love it if Outward Bound could have full centres every week and we could have students coming to us. But also, I want that centre that gave me that opportunity in the Isle of Man to still be open in 10 years' time. Because they're a small family-run centre. So outdoor centres isn't just Outward Bound. It is everything that, you know, that could go with it. So basically, every nation has their own bill being proposed. I know more about Scotland. So in Scotland, it's mainly looking at making sure that every young person in secondary education will, between, I think it's the focusing on S1 to 4, which in English terms would be 7 to 8, 9, 10. Get provision to do outdoor education. So the Let Us Out campaign is basically us trying to raise our voice that we need people to, if they care about outdoor provision, or if you're ever being touched by outdoors, the outdoors and the power of it, to message your MPs, talk to people, engage with all this stuff and try and get every MP to vote in vain for this. It's still going through the parliamentary process. So I believe at the moment they're all at different stages. The Scottish ones in the second reading phase. I don't know what that means. But our director of Outward Bound will know what that is. But it's so important. Young people are constantly getting provision cut. Like I remember even when I was younger, the skate park in my town. At one point, the skate park had this half pipe. And then the half pipe was just falling apart. You know, we've seen it. I think everyone's got their own story of, you know, a provision for young people that just gets taken away. So let's start adding some and let's get young people outside.
Great. Yeah, we'll definitely have, you know, links to the Let Us Out campaign. We'll have those in the show notes so we know how we can get involved and show our support. And you guys are a charity, right? So, yes. You know, do you guys accept donations? How can we kind of get involved and support the work that you do?
Yeah, we do accept donations. I must admit, the way that we do, I'm not in the fundraising team, but there's loads of different projects and stuff like that. And I know mainly we go for quite some big like things, like, so we'd have done like abseiling down the Shard in London and all this kind of stuff. So there are ways that you can donate. Some of those things are quite pricey because they're trying to be big experiences, and running outdoor centres are quite big. But the main thing I think you can support, and the best way you can support Outward Bound is to do this, really. So if the government are giving us money, it means that we can stay open. And that means we can have more schools. And it is pretty crazy. So this we have these learning meetings every morning, and where we talk through our plans, what we're doing today and what I've chosen to do with my group. And then a talk with just the teachers where we can kind of go down what we're trying to achieve with the young people today. And I just introduced the Let Us Out leaflets and said, like, this is happening. And even teachers, and this isn't anything, the teachers we work with are all brilliant. But like, they don't know about this. So it's just something that we haven't signposted, but the government aren't talking about it, even though it's going through the reading phases. So let's make people aware of it. That's how you, the listener, that's me coming at you, pointing my finger, can do it, is find out about this. Write Let Us Out, go to Outward Bound, share it on your socials, all that kind of stuff, and write to your MP. If you've got a teacher that works with young people or a youth worker, get them to do it too. If you've got kids, obviously, I hope you want them to come have an outdoor experience. But yeah.
Absolutely. Yeah. That's absolutely brilliant. Thank you so much for sharing that. I'll definitely have all the links for, you know, how we can get involved in the show notes. So for those of you that are keen to get involved, you'll easily be able to find how to do that. James, the last thing that we like to do on this show is just to give you a chance to step away a little bit from exactly what you're doing, think a little bit further afield, and just give a shout out to someone that you think is making a really positive impact in the world. That could be an individual, whether they be famous or not, or a business or an organization. Anyone that you think is worth, you know, a bit of a shout out and a bit of attention.
I've got a couple of little bits. One's quite quick. One's just a podcast that if you're interested in developing young people or even yourself, and there's a really good podcast called The Learner's Lab that's run by a guy called Trevor Reagan from the States. He comes from a sports science background, but basically he's come up with so many different ways of how young people can become better learners. One of his main models and theories he comes up with is about tigers, basically, and it's about jungles and zoo tigers. And it's about how if you have two tigers, one's a jungle, one's in a zoo, the jungle tiger is going to be filled with so much more struggle, and they're not going to be safe, and they're going to be putting themselves out there on the daily. And then you've got the zoo tiger, gets everything to it, there's no struggle. The main thing is struggle equals growth. It's really simple. And yet, even I, and even probably yourself, we stay in the zoo all the time. We can tell that actually if we come speak, for example, I was a bit nervous coming to speak on this podcast. I am now getting better at doing podcasts because I'm here. Does that make sense? But it would have been quite easy for me just to step back and say, I don't want to do that, so I'm not going to do that. And we do it quite regularly. So anyway, so that's Trevor Reagan with the Learner's Lab. And then on a personal level, I've got a really good friend called Morag Skelton, who's a climber, and she's also profoundly deaf. And she's just done her mountain climbing instructor award. She's also got a small short video with Berghaus Ascension Series, basically where she's trying to highlight deafness in the outdoors and also trying to get more things like sign language and subtitles put on adventure films to make it more accessible for deaf people, which is a really awesome thing. And then lastly, I want to also shout out some of our partners. I'm just going to use one as an example of Clued Up, and they're based down south in Scotland, and they work with young people that are affected by drugs. And that's just an idea of some of the amazing partners we have with Outward Bound and the kind of young people that we can help. So,
yeah. Oh, wow. That's wonderful. The more the merrier. I love it. I love it when people do more.
Sorry. Great. I went a bit overboard.
No, not
like,
at all.
I like to talk.
You kind of... No, that's good. James, thank you so much. That's been honestly really, really quite heartwarming for me and uplifting and just... Yeah, it was lovely hearing those stories, you know, and those real examples of why this stuff matters. I'd say it's not something I've ever really given too much thought until I happened to stumble across you guys by chance. And I really hope now that having spoken to you and hearing from you and our listeners hearing this will kind of take away some of the things that I did and maybe pay a little bit more attention than they might have done. Mm-hmm. Thank you so much for your time. I really do appreciate it.
Yeah, no worries. And if anyone's ever feeling a bit sad, just go down into your local bit of water and go for a dip. And that might help you out. That's my top tip.
Top tip advice. Thank you so much, James. Take care of yourself.
No worries. See you later.
I don't know about you, but as I sit here editing this show and recording this outro, I just really want to get outside. And I urge you to do the same. So I'm going to wrap this up very, very quickly. You can find out more about the Outward Bound Trust in the show notes, as well as links to James's shout-outs, which were the Learner's Lab podcast, Morag Skelton, you'll find a link to the Ascension film that James referenced to, and Clued Up, the Scottish charity working with young people affected by drug use. Thanks for listening. I'm really grateful that I get the chance to sit here and chat with some amazing people. And if there's anyone you'd like us to have on, then please do get in touch on cpi@soundquake.co.uk. That's CPI for creating a positive impact @soundquake.co.uk, or use the Q&A function on Spotify. Today, I'm going to leave you with a relevant quote, which I got from John Azarav. A comfort zone is a beautiful place, but nothing ever grows there.